Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Welcome to another edition of Drive Time Sports. Right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Happy to be back with you as we inch closer and closer to the end of the week, Thursday edition during the dog days of summer. Because of that, we got a lot of national sports to talk about. I want to talk more college football today. Yesterday was Pac-12 Media Day, so we'll get to that in just a bit. If you missed Coach Kyle Whittingham's interview, I'm going to play you a little bit of it. Coach Whittingham addressed several different topics. His coaching segment was quite a bit less than some of the others, including Clay Helton, but I don't think Coach Whittingham was upset about that. We'll play most of that interview coming up here in just a bit. And as far as some of the national sports headlines go, look no further than Major League Baseball. The New York Yankees have landed J.A. Happ today, picking up a future starting left-hander from the Toronto Blue Jays. I love this move right here. Happ has struggled leading up to the trade deadline. He had a 3.4 ERA through his first 14 starts, and he's 35 years old. He's given up 21 earned runs and 7 homers in the last 31 innings since June 20th, but that's okay. I'm all right with this. This was a name that has floated around for quite some time. Really, you got to go back about 2 months ago. And I really think this is one of those rare occurrences where both teams win. Because Toronto was 17-12 to start the year. Since that point, they're 14 games under 500, 29-43. 9 games under the 500 mark at the moment. 14.5 back of the AL's second wildcard spot entering today's play. So if you're the Blue Jays, go ahead, call it in. Happ is tied for 17th among AL pitchers with 2 wins above replacement. Okay, he's due to become a free agent after this season, so that's where it's a win for the Toronto Blue Jays. And it's a big win for the Yankees, considering the fit. It's almost like a puzzle at this point in time. You can go ahead and grab selling teams' best prospects or best trade assets. That's fine. But this really fits for the Yankees. They needed to find some sort of competitive edge because the Red Sox are the real deal. To me, it's the Red Sox and the Astros, and I still think the Yankees are chasing. And I think this move definitely helps. It closes that gap. Happ fits exactly what they need. The Yankees needed help in their rotation, and you're going to add a lefty like Happ. I'm all for it. Luis Severino, CC Sabathia, those are the only starters with at least 100 innings and an ERA under 4 for the Yankees up to this point. And I understand that Happ has struggled as of late. Don't care. Willing to take the risk. The Yankees have done some work at the deadline. They're all in. This team's a lock for the postseason, and just like last year, I would expect them to get past that game and make a deep run. But the AL is going to be very interesting. I know it's somewhat boring outside of that last playoff spot right now because the divisions, I mean, really, when you look at the American League as it sits right now, the Red Sox 5.5 up on the Yankees. That's a compelling race just because it's Red Sox-Yankees. After that, you have Tampa Bay, who's 18.5 back of the Red Sox. The Central, the Indians at 55-46. They've done a little bit here over the last couple of days to improve their middle rotation, or middle relief, I should say. 7.5 up on the Twins, who are 6 games under 500. Dreadful division. Indians are a lock. AL West. It's a 5-game stretch right now between the Astros and the Mariners, and the A's are right behind the Mariners at 6.5. So I think we could have a compelling race there. But outside of the wild card race itself, which is going to be very fun, because I'm talking about the Yankees at 64-36. Look, the A's are 4 games back. That's a fun race. 4.5 back. That's going to be a fun race. The divisions are all but decided. And again, I still think it goes through Boston and it goes through Houston as far as the AL goes. Would not be surprised if it's Boston and Houston for the AL championship, and that would be an epic 7-game set. But I like the moves the Yankees have made. over the last 3 or 4 days, making moves within their own division. Now, speaking of Major League Baseball, let's talk about Albert Pujols and what he accomplished last night. Anytime there's some history in the game of Major League Baseball, you have to pay attention to it. Last night, Albert Pujols hits his 631st career home run, passing Ken Griffey Jr. on the all-time list. He is now number 6 overall.
And Albert launches one out to left field, 2-0 Halos. Huge big fly, and he watched it for a while, and I don't think James Shields enjoyed it.
Yeah, I highly doubt James Shields enjoyed that. Pujols has only hit 17 home runs this season. But, boy, I tell you, when you talk about 631 career home runs, he still sits 132 behind Barry Bonds, who holds the record with 762. He is, though, rapidly approaching Willie Mays, who hit 660. A-Rod sits alone in fourth place at 696, which could be pretty difficult for Pujols to catch, considering he is 38 years old. He's been in the league since 2001, obviously beginning his career with the Cardinals. He's hit 186 home runs in his 7 seasons with the Angels. He was placed on the 10-day DL list before the All-Star game, had a knee injury, made his return to the field after missing 6 games on Monday, and last night passes Ken Griffey Jr. Piece of baseball history there. Absolutely fantastic. Let's take a look at the scoreboard in Major League Baseball, because we have had day games pretty much all day long. We have one going on right now. The Angels, same Angels, leading the White Sox 6-2. This one is going into the 7th inning. The Angels well in control over a bad White Sox squad. We had a final earlier today. The Cubs in a very entertaining series with the Diamondbacks pick up a 7-6 win. The Diamondbacks have been threatening to pass the Dodgers in the NL West. Don't seem to have enough oomph to get over that. They took 2 from the Cubbies to start the series, lost the last 2 in a 4-game split. The Phillies and the Reds will take the field tonight at 5 p.m., so about 45 minutes away from start time there. Also in the 5 o'clock hour, we get the Rays and the Orioles. The Royals will take on the Yankees. We get the Mets and the Pirates. The Red Sox will play host to the Twins. And the struggling Washington Nationals, who are under 500 as we speak, will travel to meet the Miami Marlins. And also in the 5 o'clock hour, we get the Dodgers and the Braves. Fun contest there. Rich Hill goes up against Anibal Sanchez. We take a look at the 6 o'clock hour in Major League Baseball. The Oakland A's will travel to meet the Texas Rangers. And then at 8:15 in the nightcap tonight, we get the Milwaukee Brewers and the San Francisco Giants. And that rounds out the schedule for baseball. Now, we didn't talk about this yesterday, but I want to mention it. Because I was a little bit saddened by this. Justify, the Triple Crown winning horse. And we talked a lot about Justify here on Drive Time Sports, speaking of history. It was announced yesterday that he will never race again. He is actually retiring because of fluid in his left ankle. Trainer Bob Badford and Justify's owner said caution over the horse's ankle condition made it impossible to tell if he would ever be healthy enough to race by the fall. And that's what we were looking for. Remember the Breeders' Cup right around the corner? That's where American Pharoah lost after he won the Triple Crown. So I was curious to see Justify in that setting once again. Badford said that Justify wasn't responding quickly enough to treatment to be able to race in the next few months, so they made the decision to retire him. The goal again was for him to run in the major race this summer, like the Travers. Maybe that's at Saratoga, the $5 million Breeder Cup Classic, which is in November, but not going to happen. Still, a fairly legendary resume for Justify. Won all 6 of his career starts, was the first horse since Apollo in 1882 to win the Kentucky Derby after not racing as a 2-year-old. Obviously won the Preakness of the Belmont, was the 13th Triple Crown winner. In addition to the Triple Crown, he won the Santa Anita Derby, and he retires with career earnings of about $3.8 million. All in a day's work, young fella. Enjoy retirement. Justify will never race again, and he'll ride off into the sunset. He's a legend as far as horse racing goes. Outside of that, it is a very quiet day in the national sports front, although there is some news coming out of Atlanta, and if you're a Falcons fan, this will make you extremely happy. Late last night, a contract adjustment has been made to Julio Jones' current deal. It's going to boost his $10.5 million salary for this year, rather than reworking the entire deal that had $34 million over the next 3 years remaining on it. The adjustment is believed to increase Jones' salary by at least $2 million. Jones initially signed a 5-year, $71 million contract back in 2015, and that was $47 million guaranteed. And there was talks of a possible holdout. And yesterday we talked about the Rams signing Brandon Cooks. And the reason why I like that deal so much, they didn't allow Julio, who's better, or even Odell, who is better, to set the market, and he came in just behind Mike Evans. If you're a Falcon fan, you're probably somewhat concerned about this. Dan Quinn said he knew that Julio was never going to miss any part of training camp. He's not going to. That situation is sealed and in the books. That's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports front. Again, I want to talk some college football on the show today. If you missed Pac-12 Media Day yesterday, no worries. When we return, I'm going to play you a bit of Coach Kyle Whittingham's podium presser. That's coming up here on Drive Time Sports, Thursday edition of the show on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And we will begin with American Legion Baseball. Helper will enter the opening round of the Utah State Championship on Friday as they travel to Kearns at Gatesville to take on Syracuse. Helper is one of the two number one seeds in the tournament after most recently winning the regional championship in Pleasant Grove. Helper will take on Syracuse Friday, and a win means that they would take on either St. George or North Cache on Saturday. Yesterday, during KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we were joined by Coach Jeff Cincinnaris, and he talked about the four teams from the Southern Division that qualified for the state championship. That includes Helper, St. George, Pleasant Grove, and Salem Hills.
No surprises in the four teams coming out of our league, maybe just the seeding that they're coming out, but all four of our teams are really good teams, and any four of us have a great chance of winning the state tournament, and I'm sure there's a team or two out of the north that, you know, is going to fall into that category. But I wouldn't be a bit surprised to see any one of our four teams win the state tournament.
Helper had multiple close calls in winning the regional championship. In fact, they won two games by just one run, having to use a four-run bottom of the seventh inning rally to top St. George. Cincinnaris says that right there in itself is proof that this team can beat anyone when they're firing on all cylinders.
You know, I believed it clear back in the high school season with our group, and definitely in the Legion season when we show up and play with the effort and, you know, the urgency of that particular game, you know, I don't think there's a team that could beat us. And I truly believe that, and these guys have shown that on occasion. It's just drives me nuts when they show up and don't play that way. You know, it's just I just try and tell them, you just don't, you know, these opportunities are once-in-a-lifetime opportunities, and before you know it, they're gone.
You can get a complete bracket for tomorrow's opening round by visiting CastleCountryRadio.com. We are on the eve of the Dinosaur Les Schwab Tire Cowboys Memorial Rodeo, which will take place tomorrow and Saturday at the Castledale Fairgrounds. Filled with events on both nights, the Cowboys Memorial Rodeo will be sanctioned by the Rocky Mountain Pro Rodeo Association. Both evenings will include all of the traditional rodeo favorites. Now, entertainment this year will include the Jeff Kill Band performing live on Friday night after the rodeo. Admission will be free with your paid rodeo ticket. The Dally Ribbon Roping Jackpot will also take place both Friday and Saturday nights during the halftime intermission. All tickets for the rodeo will be general admission. Adult tickets are $10. Kids 6 to 11 are $6. And kids 5 years or under are free. Concessions will be available as well, giving families a dinner option each night. We move over to junior college athletics, and the upcoming 2018 fall sports season schedules have been posted at CastleCountryRadio.com and USUEasternAthletics.com. The fall sports schedule does include volleyball and men's and women's soccer, as both will compete in the NJCAA Region 18. And USU Eastern Volleyball will begin their season under third-year head coach Daniel Jensen on Friday, August 24th, against Western Wyoming in Richfield. That weekend, they will take on three more teams during the first tournament of the season. Volleyball's first home game will take place on Friday, September 21st. Last season, the volleyball team reached a national ranking of 13 and finished 18-10 overall. Now, the men's and women's soccer programs will begin their season with a pair of exhibition games in Ontario, Oregon on August 10th and 11th against Blue Mountain Community College and Treasure Valley Community College. Last season, the USU Eastern women's soccer team finished the season as the runners-up of the conference, and the men's soccer team finished with a loss in the semifinals of the conference tournament. Again, you can get the complete schedules for the upcoming year by visiting CastleCountryRadio.com. And we'll begin to start dissecting the fall schedules for both Carbon and Emory sports. That'll be coming up in the near future, as well as the fall sports schedule for Pinnacle High School. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
In 5, 4, 3, 2... I'm Joe Wade Formicola, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Real name, no gimmicks.
On 750 AM, KOAL.
So I came to the grave. Real name, no gimmicks.
That's why I ain't got no.
Pac-12 Media Day yesterday. Gearing up for the college football season. Of course, the Utes, you'll be able to follow them all year long with Bill Riley right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. They kick off the season a little over a month from today. They take on Weber State August 30th at 6 p.m. The Utes, of course, will fall in line with our extended football coverage. The NFL, college, high school, we have a little bit of everything coming up for you in the next month or so. I find Media Day to be extremely entertaining. And I'll be the first to admit, a lot of that probably has to do with the fact that we're so starved for football at this point in time. But the Pac-12 is going to be a very interesting conference. It's going to be a very interesting conference. I think when you look at it front to back in the South, USC may be the front runner. Travis and I have gone back and forth on this one. He likes Utah to win the South. I like USC to win the South. I still think they're the cream of the crop. But the Utes are a team that could definitely surprise. Combination of the offense in its second year after a little tweak. I think they have a fair enough schedule that will keep them in the conference title hunt. I don't know, again, I don't know if they have the pieces defensively to match up with someone like USC, but I think the Utes are going to be a team that you have to pay attention to in the Pac-12 this year. I think the Utes are always a team you have to pay attention to. It's never an easy out, but this is a year where I think they legitimately push for the Pac-12 South crown. And what do I mean by legitimately? There are years in conference championship football where a team can get lucky in a game or two and be in the hunt, and you know that if they get to that championship game, they may not have any business being there. You know, you go back, what was it, 6-7 years ago for the Utes, the year that USC was on probation. Had Utah beat Colorado, they would have snuck in. That wasn't legit. This is their I think this is a legit chance for this team to win the South and make some noise in the Pac-12. If you missed the conference media day, again, it was yesterday, and here's about 10-11 minutes of Coach Kyle Whittingham on the podium.
Well, I think we got a lot going for us coming back this fall. We've got a good situation at quarterback. We've got a running back, four of our five starting offensive linemen back, some talented kids on defense, solid special teams. So we got some positives. We still have some question marks, obviously. Inexperienced receiver group that's got to step up. Lost our two top tight ends, so we got new faces there. But we got a lot of guys that are very focused and really like the attitude and the demeanor of this football team.
What's the next step that Zach Moss needs to take
as a running back? Zach Moss, his next step is just to pick up where he left off last fall. I thought the light switch went on for him about the USC game. He ran with a great deal of violence and physicality from that point on throughout the remainder of the season, and really was the back that we envisioned him being when we recruited him, and he just needs to continue on that trajectory.
Talk about your quarterback situation, like how happy or maybe unhappy you may be with their development.
Okay, we think we got a good situation at quarterback. We got Tyler Huntley coming back as the incumbent. He was the guy that started all, but I think it was four games for us last year. Behind Tyler, we have a redshirt freshman, Jason Shelley from Texas, who had an outstanding spring. He's a lot like Tyler, a dual-threat quarterback. And then we just recruited Jack Tuttle from San Diego area. He's a guy that was with us in spring ball, exceptionally talented young man. And, you know, this fall camp, it's going to be those three guys getting all the reps at the position.
How have you had a knack for turning out really good offensively? What are the traits you're looking for when you're recruiting those guys?
Yeah, we've had a good run of linemen, both sides of the ball. We oftentimes don't get the 5- and 4-star guys that are ready-made, ready to play. So we've got to project a little bit and evaluate. And we look for big frames that can run. You know, they may be 30 or 40 pounds underweight in high school, but we know in a few years, you know, in our strength program that a 240-pound guy is going to be 290 or 300 pounds. And so I think it's a great job by our assistant coaches of projecting talent and being great evaluators, and that really is what recruiting is all about. There's no surefire things. Even the 5- and 4-star guys, there's no guarantees there.
You mentioned the highly touted recruits. Even among them, what percentage of are ready to play? Is
10%, 5%?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I know the freshmen are more ready now than maybe ever before. I mean, you know, back when I first got into coaching, 95% of your freshman class would redshirt. Now it's probably less than 50%. So the numbers have been seeming to trend in that direction, and I can't give you an exact percentage on it, but I just know that many more freshmen are playing now than ever before.
Along those lines, how do you think the new rule regarding redshirts will change your personnel usage?
Yeah, I think the new redshirt rule is a huge positive for the players. I think it was a great decision by the NC2A. Now, there's a lot of conversation that's taken place and will continue to take place of how to use that redshirt, the new redshirt rule, because you can use any four games, can be all up front, all at the end, mixed in between. And so I think it really boils down to the position group. If you got a position group that is loaded and you don't think you're necessarily going to get to one of those freshmen, you might put them in a game where it gets out of hand, where you can get them some experience. Whereas if you got a position group that's thin and you may need to rely on that guy at some point, you want to have every bullet you have or that you can to be able to utilize him to help your team win. So I don't think there's anybody that's got a exact formula on how to use it right now, but I think the biggest criteria is where you are as a position group, you know, with that kid. Yeah, we've been competitive. We've had the opportunity to get to the championship game a couple times since we joined the league, have not capitalized on that opportunity. And that's the next step in our evolution as a program, in our estimation, is getting to that championship game. Every team in the conference wants to get there. You know, I've heard it over and over. We're the only team in the South since we joined the league that hasn't got there. But you know, we own up to that. We're not trying to hide from that. It's just something that needs to happen. And is, like I said, is the next step for us as a program.
To sustain a program and the success that you guys have had, you have to have good coaches. And beyond just hiring guys that know football, what are you looking for from assistant coaches?
Assistant coaches, I think, I think there's three real main factors that I look for: intelligence, character, and energy. And that's, that supersedes experience. That supersedes a lot of things. I think if you got a guy that's really smart, he's a high character guy, he's got a bunch of energy, then he can, if he's not already, he can evolve into a very good football coach. And we've been fortunate to have a lot of continuity on our staff for the most part. You know, we've had some issues at offensive coordinator, but every other spot on the staff has been very solid and very, very, a lot of consistency. But with Troy now going into a second year with the offense, we feel good about the direction the offense is heading. And so, this particular year we lost no coaches. We added Gary Anderson as our 10th coach when the NC2A allowed you to add a 10th coach. So the continuity of our staff right now we feel really good about. The addition of Chip Kelly to the conference, well, first of all, I think all five guys that are new to the conference are tremendous football coaches. I think there's just a bunch of great coaches in this league, and that's great, and that's something that will enhance the league, but it still boils down to players. Players are what it's all about. And so I'm more interested in what players are on which teams rather than who's coaching them.
When Chip first got to Oregon as coordinator, his use of tempo was really something that mm-hmm. not a lot of us had seen, especially
right.
at the power conference level. Is tempo the equalizer it was, or is it sort of evened out?
I think tempo is everyone's become accustomed to it, and the high tempo is the tempo now. It's no longer a changeup; that's the norm. And so, when you get somebody that slows down, that's really when it becomes a change for you. And so, when it initially was came on the scene, 5, 6, 7 years ago, it was certainly something that defenses had not been accustomed to and weren't adjusted to, but now we practice at such a high tempo with our defense that it doesn't bother us anymore. And really, offense is all about execution, you know. And if you can, you know, the most lethal offense is an offense that can go high tempo and execute. But if your execution is suffering because of the speed at which you're going, then I don't think the trade-off is worth it. But the tempo offenses are certainly the rule rather than the exception anymore. The positional group that needs the most work, that's a tough question. I would say the group that needs to really step up is the wide receivers. We have a lot of inexperienced wide receivers. We lost Darren Carrington and Ray Singleton. So there's a lot of good players in that group, very good players that are unproven. And that's really, in my estimation, the biggest key to how our offense goes this year is going to be how the receiving group comes along and becomes, and performs for us and contributes.
Is there an alpha in that group, in your estimation?
Well, Britton Covey is a tremendous player. You know, it was great to have Britton back. CLC Wilson is a guy that I think is ready to have a breakout year. And we got three or four other guys that, you know, are really, you know, nobody, they're kind of under the radar that we're excited about.
Coach, you must be thrilled to get Coach Anderson back on staff. How did that materialize? There must have been a tug of war for him. He was pretty much in demand.
Well, the day after he stepped down is probably, you know, is about when it happened. I mean, me and Gary are close friends. We've been great friends for years and years, and it was very shortly after he stepped down at Oregon State that we decided that he'd be a great fit at Utah.
A question, the BYU game is now at the end where Colorado had been for years. Is this going to be going forward with BYU or just a one-year thing?
No, to my knowledge, this is a one-off and a scheduling, kind of a quirk in the scheduling where I think it was the conference that made the suggestion if we could move this game to the last game of the season. But to my knowledge, going forward, that game will always be played in the first three games of the year.
With Britton and other guys coming back from missions, how do you get them back into game shape?
Yeah, well, Britton's been home since April? So he's had a pretty good time frame there to get himself ready and get himself up to speed. He looks great in the summer conditioning. Obviously, haven't seen him run routes and catch balls yet. We'll be able to do that next Wednesday. But, you know, when you deal with the missionaries, it's a timing thing on when they get back. Also, the position they play plays into it, you know, the readiness of based on the position that they're playing. And so I just know that it's been a big positive for us. The mission program at University of Utah has been a big plus for us and given us a lot of – we've reaped a lot of rewards from that program through the years. Nick Ford, redshirt freshman this fall, gifted player, big kid, 6'5", 320 pounds, and brought him in originally as a defensive lineman, made the move shortly thereafter to offensive line. That definitely is his home. And you're going to see him in the rotation this year. Okay.
How do you decide who on your staff gets to make the recruiting trips to Australia?
The recruiting trips to Australia. We got the guy that has Hawaii is automatically designated the Australia guy. I guess that's the closest guy to it. So Lewis Powell has been, he's logged a lot of miles. He's gone to Guam. He's gone to the Philippines. He's gone to Australia. He's a diamond medallion at Delta. And so he did that in about a month. So he's the guy, and it's all based on geographics.
Coach, talk a little bit about that Northern Illinois game. That kind of sticks out that you have to go on the road and play a non-Power 5 opponent.
Yeah, a good non-Power 5 opponent. A blue-collar, tough, physical outfit. And so that's something that is on the schedule. I never really worry about the schedule. I don't complain about it or really analyze it too much. You just play them as they unfold. It is not the norm to do something like that, but that's out of my hands.
With the college football playoff now in its fourth season, do you really think that you have to look re-examine your scheduling philosophy?
With nine Pac-12 games, I don't think so. I think that if you're an eight-game conference schedule, then I think that getting a game within those non-conference opponents that would be a high-profile game would be necessary. But with a nine conference game schedule, like I said, I think there's a danger in overscheduling. There's a danger in underscheduling, and so I think we've been pretty balanced throughout the years.
Do you think there's a imbalance with some conferences playing eight conference games and others playing?
I sure do, and I'd like to see a uniform, standardized Power 5 schedule, throughout all the Power 5 conferences, and it doesn't matter whether it's 8, 9, 10, as long as it's uniform and everyone's on the same playing field and the same, under the same guidelines.
Again, that's Coach Kyle Whittingham yesterday at Pac-12 Media Day. I love the fact that this guy's never on the hot seat. Never on the hot seat. And when I look at the Pac-12, and the reason why the South is so interesting, there are five Pac-12 coaches, in my opinion, that are on the hot seat. Four of them reside in the Pac-12 South. Mike McIntyre, who has joined us on the show multiple times, love Coach Mack. I thought it was a good year for Colorado. Obviously, they have to improve. He's on the hot seat. Herm Edwards, that sounds bizarre. He hasn't even coached a game at Arizona State. Boosters weren't happy about this. That wasn't a very friendly hire. I think Herm Edwards is on the hot seat. If it is a disaster for him in year one, he may not get year two. I think Clay Helton's on the hot seat at USC. That's USC. It's a different animal. You know, it's not Washington State. It's not Colorado. It's not even UCLA. I mean, we're talking USC. It's a different level. Clay Helton's on the hot seat. And I think Kevin Sumlin in Arizona is another coach that may just be on the hot seat as well. And again, we're talking about a new head coach. I love the idea of Sumlin being in Arizona, but for some reason, his name floated around other rumored jobs for a very long time. Unlike Herm Edwards, I'm telling you, Arizona fans are going to love that hire. That one's going to work out, but he's still on the hot seat. Chip Kelly's not. UCLA knows it's going to take time. They got their guy. Kyle Whittingham, never on the hot seat. Let's break for just a moment. We have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
This is John Wall from the Washington Wizards. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buskerings on KOAL 750 AM.
Wall shoots over Bayless. Dagger! John Wall with a career-high 47 points.
We're back on this Thursday edition of Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. I want to talk more Major League Baseball. Again, the news earlier today, the Yankees acquiring J.A. Happ, really, really strengthening that rotation. I think it's a real fun time for Major League Baseball because even if your team is bad, they're probably going to be sellers here in the next couple of weeks, and that's entertaining. It's entertaining on all fronts. Let's take a look at some of the names that'll be appearing within the trade deadline chatter here in the next little while. And I think that Happ was probably one of the top five that are most likely to be moved between now and the deadline. But with him off the market, I have to believe that Mike Moustakas of the Kansas City Royals may be the next to go. Because again, if we're looking at bad baseball teams, we've made jokes about the Orioles, how bad they are in a very talented AL East. They're 29-73. Well, guess what? The Royals are at 31-70. They're not that far behind. Moustakas is 29 years old, and here's where he's different than Manny Machado. I don't believe you rent a 26-year-old Machado. So the Dodgers give up five prospects for Machado. There's a reason for that. They're going to sign a big check this offseason, and I would be surprised if Machado's not back in Dodger blue next season. Machado's a superstar. You don't rent superstars who are in their prime. That doesn't happen. Moustakas is 29 years old. Obviously, he's not to the ability of Machado, but you give up less, and okay, you can rent Moustakas. Batting .249, 20 home runs, can give you some help in the infield at third base. I think he's brought in 60-something RBI so far this year. He's been crushing right-handed pitching. 815 OPS, 16 home runs, and 44 RBIs against right-handed pitching. Launched 38 home runs last season. Plenty of power for someone who needs, for a contender who needs that, and who doesn't need that. Two-time All-Star, has a World Series championship. To me, that's a guy that you got to pay close attention to. I would expect him to be on the move in the next couple of days, and I think that's an impact play right there. I think it's impactful enough. I think it's similar to the Diamondbacks going up and getting J.D. Martinez last year. I really do. I think that amount of power could be that much of a difference maker for a team. And in the next couple of weeks, that's an interesting name to watch. I'll stick with the AL, Adam Jones. Baltimore is in full rebuild mode at this particular time. Machado's gone. Britton's gone. This is the last big name that needs to be moved in the total teardown. Plus, he's 32 years old. That makes him an attractive rental. And in 96 games this season, he's been very good. Hitting .277. He's got 10 home runs. He has 38 RBIs. Five-time All-Star, four-time Gold Glove. Not having his best season, but the team is terrible. And really, when you're talking about clubhouse fits, it works. And I know that the Phillies were a team that were hot for Manny Machado. In fact, there was a rumor that Machado was going to go to Philadelphia the next day. That rumor is squashed, and he goes to L.A. They've already had dealings with Philadelphia. They've had conversations with Philadelphia. I think he fits. And the Phillies appear to be the team to beat in that division right now because the Braves, for as great as Atlanta has been, everybody is waiting for them to turn back into a pumpkin. Philly now has a game and a half lead in the East on the Braves. This makes a lot of sense. I would be surprised if the Phillies actually don't make a move relatively soon. And again, since they've already had their dealings with the likes of Baltimore, there's probably a chance they could land Adam Jones. I would like that move for them an awful lot. That's another name to watch. Another that I believe is going to be a solid addition to someone, and I talk about this kid every single year, it's Chris Archer. And really, I think it would be in his best interest to find a new home relatively soon. He's not a rental either, because he's due $7.7 million next season. He has club options for $9 million and $11 million up until 2021. He can be bought out for something like $2 million in 2020. That's relatively cheap, and I also believe because of that contract, if you're the Rays, you can get a little bit more out of Chris Archer in the coming days, now that Happ is off of the market. And when I look at some of the other pitchers that are on the market, a guy that I would say to stay away, I would stay away from is Cole Hamels. I would stay away from Cole Hamels. When you look at what he's been able to accomplish over the course of his career, he's been good. He has not been good this season. And a lot of that may be that he does play in a hitter's ballpark in Arlington. The heat and the humidity can send balls flying. Everybody knows that. But nearly half of batted balls against Hamels are being hit. And they're being hit hard. It's according to Bleacher Report and Fangraphs. 45% of the balls that are being hit off Hamels are being hit hard. He's not just getting dinked and dunked. And a bigger concern may be the hard hit rate. It's increased over the past few years. So what is he losing on velocity? What is he losing in control? Maybe it's a change of scenery. But that's another pitch. I would stay away from him. I feel that Chris Archer is a safer option than Cole Hamels. I can't believe I'm saying that. But Cole Hamels is going to be a name that will pop up, I think, over the next couple of days. Here's a guy I would absolutely stay away from, and it's Matt Harvey. But Matt Harvey is going to get moved. He's actually been one of the better pitchers over the last little while. I mean, it was a mess the way things ended in New York. It was a mess. But when you look at some of the performances that he has had, over the past two seasons, he had a 5.7 ERA, and then he was 0-2 with a 7 ERA in four starts before the Mets traded him off to Cincinnati. Since then, he's had some outings that have been very, very good. 5 2/3 shutout innings earlier this month, but for every positive, there has been a negative for Matt Harvey. And I think he gave up like 7 earned runs against Pittsburgh over the weekend. He's allowing a lot of hard contact as well. I think Matt Harvey has done enough. And again, the Reds have played better baseball, but they are not in playoff contention. And I think because of that, the Reds will look to move Matt Harvey here relatively soon. And I think somebody will take a risk on him, even if he's used as middle relief in the postseason. I think that's a possibility as well. When we look at some of the other pitchers that are going to be on the market, and again, this is what I think makes Chris Archer so much more attractive, maybe Tyson Ross for San Diego. The Padres are the worst team in the NL West. I think they're a year, maybe 2 years away from contending. And then you go to the bullpen, and really, one of the only names that I think makes sense at this point in time to be moved after Britton's on his way out would be Miami, who continues to try to just tear things down. Adam Conley. Conley's probably a name, I think, in the National League. You could see him helping maybe Cleveland, who needed some bullpen help. Tried to do that a little bit already. And then I think another name that you have to pay attention to as far as the trade deadline approaches, and this goes for the Cincinnati Reds, and I can bring in Travis for this because we've already talked about Matt Harvey, but I'm going to bring up Billy Hamilton. Billy Hamilton being moved at the deadline would not shock me at all. It could fit in with a team looking for an outfielder, maybe a pinch runner in late-game situations. I love his speed. As far as his offense goes, one of the worst offensive seasons of his career, and that's really saying something because he's a career... What is he? He's like 290. I can't remember what he is. His on base percentage is like 298 or something.
I mean, not very good for a guy that you want in a leadoff spot. So for Billy Hamilton, I'm waiting for them to move him because I think he's going to be the next piece moved. If the Reds are going to obviously move Matt Harvey, that's 99% move Harvey. And then for Billy Hamilton, I'd say it's 75-80% to move Billy Hamilton.
He could fit on at a contending team. I don't think there's any question about that.
The Reds just have too many young minor leaguers that are ready to take over that position. They have a logjam of outfielders, and Winker went down with shoulder surgery today, so maybe they don't move him because now they have where they can keep Hamilton. But I would move Hamilton.
You got to move him.
I would move
him. Blandino's done for the year, too.
Blandino, so I would have moved Hamilton probably last year, but... That's what the Reds do. They wait too long to move these guys.
The Reds and the Mets, they've got to be the two biggest sellers at the deadline of the National League.
I agree.
It's got to be the Reds and the Mets. We've got a break for just a moment. We'll come back. One more segment coming up on this Thursday edition of Drive Time Sports here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
This is Trevor Ariza. You listen to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Ariza ahead of the pack. Ariza reverse slam. An explosive game for Trevor Ariza.
Back to close out this edition of Drive Time Sports. I hate this kind of talk, but this is what we're going to end with. Have you been paying attention to the Kevin Durant and CJ McCollum saga?
I did. I went back and listened to the podcast, and CJ McCollum called him out for going to Golden State, then, you know, made a tweet, and then it fired from there. But I think Barstool Sports, Big Cat's the one that kind of started the whole thing.
I'm not a Barstool Sports fan. I don't dig that aspect of sports. I'm not saying what Barstool does is wrong. I'm just saying it's not really my cup of tea. So I did not listen to the podcast. You did.
I did.
Okay,
went back and listened to it.
So tell me if I'm right here. CJ McCollum has his own podcast, which, by the way, podcast from athletes, it's pretty cool. It's a different perspective.
His is really good.
I like him. Draymond Green has one as well, right?
Yes.
I have no problem with that at all. I think that's really neat. It's called Pull Up with CJ McCollum. This was earlier in the month. The conversation that he had with Kevin Durant was more lighthearted, right? It wasn't like they didn't get into a brawl on the podcast.
No, they were just talking, you know, basketball. Kevin Durant made a comment. He said, "You guys know that you're never going to win a championship." And CJ McCollum's like, "We have two good players, some pieces around us that we could." And Kevin Durant laughed and said, "You guys will never win a championship." And CJ McCollum, well, Damian Lillard caught wind of that, and he wasn't happy about that. But, you know, that's kind of how it started from that point.
Okay. CJ McCollum tweets out, and here I'm going to read the tweet. "I still think the B word is harsh and shouldn't be used. I agree with him. He knows that decision was soft, but I respect it. It's like getting jumped with your brothers by a gang you should have beat, then joining the gang that jumped you and your brothers 2 months later and forgetting about your bros." That's where Barstool Sports jumped in. They had their fun. Kevin Durant responds with, quote, "So I would get into a gang fight, lose, plot on my brother for 2 months in our home, and then go get the gang we lost to and beat them up? You think that low of me, CJ? I just did your bleeping podcast. Snakes in the grass, boy, I'll tell ya." McCollum has since tried to calm the situation with a follow-up tweet. He didn't necessarily directly address Kevin Durant, but it's kind of spiraled off from here. Here's my assessment of it. People don't like Kevin Durant.
No.
I mean, is that a fair assessment?
There's NBA writers around the league that don't like him. There are players in the league that don't like him. And if you go look, I think it was Justin Termini, who's very good with the NBA, kind of called Kevin Durant out as well and said there's a lot of people in the league that feel the same way as I do, writer-wise and player-wise.
I don't know that Kevin Durant's really upset with CJ McCollum. I don't know that CJ McCollum's really upset with Kevin Durant. I'm sure that they have a mutual respect for one another. All I'm saying is Kevin Durant was so quiet during the beginning of his career when he was with the Thunder, when he was with the Sonics, when he was with Texas.
He was likable.
He was so likable. Is it really because he made this jump to Golden State?
Yes.
I mean, really, is it that simple, or has Kevin Durant brought this on himself?
I think Kevin Durant brought some of it on himself, but I think it has a lot to do with him going to Golden State after, you know, Oklahoma City's up 3-1 in that series, and then he goes to that team that beat his team. And I think that's where people soured on it.
Okay, you can tell me if I'm wrong here. I'm going to give you my assessment of Kevin Durant and the perception of Kevin Durant. And I want you to tell me if I'm wrong or if I'm off base here, okay? Kevin Durant is a good person. He's never been in trouble off of the court. And I think Kevin Durant wanted to leave Oklahoma City. He wanted to win a championship. It was his, that's his business. It's his right as a free agent to join whatever team he wants to join. When Kevin Durant made the jump from OKC to Golden State, he was not ready for the backlash that was going to come with it. Wasn't prepared for that.
And LeBron was the same way when he left Cleveland for the first time. And
same
went to Miami.
Way.
It's the same thing, yeah.
Kevin Durant was not prepared for that. And since, he's changed his attitude. He's been more vocal. And in today's world of social media, where, again, we have players doing podcasts, everybody has a camera on their phone, he's constantly being interviewed, he's constantly being asked the same questions. He is kind of changed, and I don't want to say he's fake, but he kind of has to play a tough guy role to appear that he's not bugged by the backlash and the criticism that has come his way. Is that a fair assessment of Kevin Durant?
He's an emotional guy. He's a sensitive guy. And you can tell that he takes things to heart by the different Twitter burner accounts that he had that he would engage in. He's just a very sensitive person that doesn't like negative things said about him. So he feels that he has to, you know, stick up for himself.
He's got one more year in Golden State, then he can leave. Will Kevin Durant ever get full credit if he sticks with Golden State for the rest of his career?
No, those championships don't mean anything. He's got two, and then they don't mean the same. And going back to what Justin Termini said of NBA Radio, he said 85% of CJ's peers say the same thing about Kevin Durant when you shut the microphone off. Props to CJ for publicly calling his move to Golden State soft.
Let me ask you this. You brought up LeBron James. LeBron James, the perception of LeBron James changed after he won a championship in Cleveland. He carried that perception of what happened in Miami. I don't think he ever got full credit for those championships in Miami. I don't.
No.
The perception changed when he won a championship in Cleveland.
Went back to Cleveland, yes, and did what he said he was going to do when he went back in 2014 and brought a title to Cleveland. He gets credit for, you know, bringing that title to Cleveland for, what, the first time in like 56 years?
So I'm not saying that Kevin Durant has to go rejoin OKC and win a championship, but he has to win a championship with another team for him to get full credit. That's where I'm sitting at right now with Kevin Durant.
Yeah, I'm with you. I agree.
All right. So my assessment on Durant is accurate.
Yeah, that I'm with you 100% on everything you said about Kevin Durant. I thought his move was soft. I did. I'm with CJ McCollum.
Out of time on this edition of the show. We will be back to wrap up the week tomorrow. He is Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We are out.